Well, hello again and welcome to another edition of Authors Audio. I'm your host, Jake D. Steele. Remember, you can listen to all of our interviews by visiting our website at www.authorsaudio.com. Click on the listen icon at the top of the homepage or the iTunes icon and listen from there. Today I have with me a very interesting and special lady. Her name is Lorraine Murray. She holds a Bachelor of Science in Geology degree from UC Davis and holds an MA in Near Eastern Studies from the University of Berkeley in California. After working for 5 years at the Lawrence Berkeley National Lab and 2 years at the Livermore Nuclear Weapons Lab, Lorraine Murray left Livermore when she stumbled upon information that was so onerous to her regarding, among other things, the danger of depleted uranium. She simply picked up and left Livermore and became a whistleblower. She now dedicates her life to revealing and understanding the actual health effects of radiation exposure. Lorraine contributed to a scientific report on depleted uranium to advise the United Nations subcommission investigating the illegality of depleted uranium munitions. She's also worked extensively with indigenous people contaminated by radiation from the nuclear weapons programs. Communities in the U.S. and other countries have been exposed to radiation from related activities, and communities impacted by radiation from nuclear power plants. She is an environmental commissioner in the city of Berkeley and testifies as a depleted uranium expert in the new documentary film Beyond Treason. She continues to lecture all over the world on the serious issues of depleted uranium, and I'm very happy to have with us today to discuss this topic, Lorraine Murray. And Lorraine, it's great to have you on Authors Audio. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Good morning. Very nice to be on your program and to talk to Canadians. Very, very nice people. You have a great program and a very, very nice website. So good job, Jake.
Well, I want to thank you so much, Lorraine, for your kind comments. I appreciate that. And I really want to get into the details of depleted uranium, because this obnoxious substance, which lasts for thousands of years, by the way, it's, after all, it's radioactive uranium. Your sons and daughters, any parents that have sons and daughters in Iraq or Afghanistan or wherever they're fighting, they're using depleted uranium tip weapons, as they call them. These shells have uranium tips because they're very, very dense. They go through almost anything very easily. But once they hit something, they explode. And, of course, this dust goes everywhere. And the dust will go into your clothes, your eyes, your ears, your lungs, and spread all over the ground and remain there for a long, long time. And I think everyone who has people involved in the wars right now, you want to know what your kids are being subjected to. And of course, for the rest of the planet, we should know too. And so let's start at the very beginning, Lorraine, and talk a little bit about your initial investigation into this, and we'll go on from there.
Well, my father was a Marine pilot, and we moved a lot, and I was the oldest of five children, and actually I went to 10 schools in 12 years. It was really hard to make new friends every year, so I really did spend a lot of time after school and on weekends out in nature, in the woods and on beaches, wherever we lived. And I just really fell in love with the natural world, and I felt safe there. So when I went off to college, I discovered geology and geology departments, and decided to make that my major, because I thought that I would be able to get a job and be paid to work in the out of doors and out in nature, which I just couldn't quite believe how wonderful that could be. So I did major in geology and graduated from UC Davis. I was the first woman to graduate from the geology department. That was in the 60s. And I have had a really very, very interesting and fascinating career. I ended up working in two nuclear weapons labs. I didn't know what nuclear weapons were, and they sure don't tell you when you're working in those places. I became a whistleblower at the Livermore Nuclear Weapons Lab in California near San Francisco in 1991. And it's really been through my investigation of radiation and health issues and how it damages the health of the environment as well, that I became interested in depleted uranium and radiation issues. And having a geoscience background, which is about the history of the Earth and studying Earth processes, natural processes, that was a key factor in understanding the devastation that has happened globally to public health and the health of the environment from nuclear bomb testing, nuclear power plants, and now the use of depleted uranium since 1991. It's a terrible, terrible story. It's affecting all living things. The half-life of depleted uranium is 4.5 billion years, which is the age of the Earth. And it takes 10 half-lives to diminish radiation to an insignificant amount. So that's, we're talking about 45 billion years. The universe is only 16 billion years old.
Well, my fellow Canadians, you're getting to know what your government is really doing behind the scenes. And you're sending your sons and your daughters and your husbands and over to Afghanistan to fight in the dust and the dirt. And now the depleted uranium, which sits on their clothes and they breathe it in, and it gets in their eyes, it gets in their skin, it gets in the drinking water that they're using and their food. And did you vote for this? Is this what you sent your family over to Afghanistan to do? This is actually an undeclared war, as a matter of fact, for Canadians. And we've been over there for a long time. I think it's around 7 years. And how many people are going to come back with serious medical conditions from this exposure? So all I can say is that Canadians, it's about time we stated our case to the government of Canada and asked them directly why these weapons are being used and why in fact we're over there in the first place using them.
It took me a long time to get over my own denial before I could really accept that this has happened and that it was deliberate.
Let's get down to some basics here, and let's talk about what depleted uranium is for those people that don't know.
Well, it's very important for Canadians and Australians and Americans to understand, because there is extensive uranium mining in the U.S. and Canada especially. Now, Canada at this time is the top uranium producer in the world. And surprisingly, by 2012, they will be outproduced by Kazakhstan. Now, does that give you a clue why the U.S. is in Afghanistan and very interested in Central Asia? It's not just oil and gas deposits. It's uranium deposits as well. And when uranium is mined, the ore is crushed and milled, and the uranium metal is extracted from the crushed ore, and it occurs in a ratio of 3 isotopes throughout nature. This is in the universe and on other planets and in solar dust and also on planet Earth. and uranium-238, which has the longest half-life, 4.5 billion years, makes up 99.3% of what occurs in nature. And that is the main component of depleted uranium. There is also 0.72% uranium-235, which will fission, so it's called a fissile isotope. And that is mined, that's what they want to extract from what occurs in nature, natural uranium metal.
And we're talking about U-235 here, are we?
Yes, U-235, and that is a much shorter half-life in thousands of years. And so they want that particular isotope. And then the other isotope is uranium-234, which is less than 0.1%. It's just sort of a very, very small portion of what occurs in nature. So what they do, because the chemistry is the same for all of the uranium isotopes, because they all have the same number of electrons in the outer shell, what they have to do is separate the isotopes by mass, or the difference in the weight. What they do is combine the uranium metal, the natural metal that's extracted from the ore, with fluoride, and they make uranium hexafluoride gas. Fluoride is extremely reactive, especially with metals. And they pass this radioactive gas containing the natural uranium isotopes through many, many membranes. And they are able to extract 0.5% of uranium-235. And what is left over is called depleted uranium by physicists and bomb makers, because it's been depleted in uranium-235. It doesn't mean it's depleted in radioactivity and it's safe or benign or whatever. 1 gram of uranium-235, which is the size of a peppercorn, releases 13,000 alpha particles a second. And when it's made into weapons, when it's weaponized and it's put in bullets and bombs and missiles, it is basically a radioactive poison gas weapon, because it burns at very, very, very high temperatures, hotter than the sun even, as high as 5,000 degrees centigrade. And what that does is it breaks the bonds of the molecules, and it turns it into a radioactive poison gas that is in the nanoparticle size range, and that goes all over the world in a matter of weeks. And so what they're nuking over there, it's actually a nuclear weapon, and it violates all international laws and the Geneva and Hague conventions. They're nuking the entire planet. There's nowhere to hide. There's no way to turn it off. There's no way to clean it up. It's the weapon that keeps giving and keeps killing.
Well, if I ever heard of insanity in terms of war, and of course war is insanity, but this is probably tops everything, because this depleted uranium is going to travel around the world. It's going to affect everybody, even the elite, even the people who think this is fine and okay to do this. It's so much more efficient, a killer. And so they're not worried about killing babies in Iraq. They're not worried about killing harmless people in Afghanistan. They're not worried about the winds carrying this dust around the world. They're simply not worried. They're probably, half of them aren't informed either. And as I said before, if you're interested in stopping this madness, at least stopping it, well, we can, then it's time to get up off our seats and take this down to our local representatives and have it out. What's the point in raising children if we're living in a world such as this? And I, for my part, will certainly be doing it.
cancer is the least of their worries. It's at the very, very bottom, the lowest disease rate of the diseases caused by exposure to depleted uranium. Actually, the highest rates that have been diagnosed by the VA in our soldiers exposed in Iraq and Afghanistan, also Yugoslavia, is its neuromuscular disease and damage. And just below that, we have a 44% medical diagnosis of mental disease in our soldiers. We have over 400,000 officially classified as medically disabled soldiers now, but that's out of a million that are actually medically disabled, but they may not know they're ill, or they haven't gone for help, or the VA hasn't seen them. Now, that's a pretty big number. Since 1991, out of 1.7 million soldiers who've been deployed to Iraq and Afghanistan, that's over 55% medically disabled. After World War II, we had a 5% medical disability rate. After Vietnam, because of Agent Orange, it increased to, it doubled up to 10%. But this is horrendous. It's over 55%. And Jake, the soldiers come to home. It's in their bodies. It's in their semen. They internally contaminate their wives and their partners. And it leaks out in their sweat and contaminates their homes and their healthy children who were born before they themselves were exposed.
Well, as I recall hearing, that Truman really knew that the Japanese were more or less done for, and there was no reason actually to drop those bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. They simply dropped them as a test to see if they would actually work, and of course they did test them before they dropped them too. It's just an unbelievable thing that mankind still, after all that, hasn't learned a thing. And I'd like to know who or what's the history of the development of the use of depleted uranium, which I understand does come from the use of uranium in nuclear reactors. In other words, this spent uranium is actually used in the processing of depleted uranium, I believe.
Well, the history of depleted uranium, it sort of starts with the 1942 memo to General Leslie Groves, who was head of the Manhattan Project. And three American scientists, Dr. James Conant, Dr. Urey, and Dr. Compton, who were on the S1 Poison Gas Committee under the Manhattan Project, recommended making dirty bombs, dirty missiles, and dirty bullets out of depleted uranium and out of fission products. And in that memo, it states very clearly that our own personnel, as well as enemy personnel, would be contaminated if they entered contaminated terrain. It also stated that the soil, the food, the air, the water, and the blood of exposed populations would also be extremely dangerously contaminated. And of course, that's why they were using it. But it's very clear in that memo that the civilian population was the real target. That's actually a fact over the last 100 years that civilians have been the main target of wars. It's a terrible truth, but that's exactly what's happening.
So from what I'm gathering, the use and production of depleted uranium weapons and shells and so on is relatively new. Have we been able to track down their development process as to when the first ones were available?
Yes. And what happened is that after World War II, also Agent Orange prototype was suggested for development, and then, of course, the atomic bombs. They used the atomic bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki, but they sort of tabled other weapon systems that were suggested for development. The very first patent that we could find in the U.S. Patent Office was 1968, and it was a Gatling gun type depleted uranium weapon system, a rapid fire kind of a machine gun setup, which was for Navy ships to shoot incoming missiles or when they were being attacked or torpedoes. Now, it pops up again in 1973 when the U.S. gave depleted uranium weapons to Israel and supervised their use in the Yom Kippur War. And at that time, the Golan Heights and Israel, of course, was contaminated from the testing of depleted uranium in their own country. And I live in Berkeley, which has a population that's about 35% Jewish. And women have come to me after they heard me on the radio and said, "Oh my God, we lived on a kibbutz in Israel. We have an epidemic of breast cancer in my family. Did we get it from the depleted uranium that was used in 1973 by Israel?" And I said, "Most likely, yes." After that Yom Kippur War, the weapons systems development by U.S. weapons manufacturers went into high gear. There was very extensive testing through the 80s and 90s and even the 70s on bombing and gunnery ranges of U.S. military bases, not just in the U.S., but around the world. And Hawaii was very, very badly contaminated. I also know that Canadian forward bases in Alberta province, Suffield and Wainwright and Namao, which is north of Edmonton, those bases are all very badly contaminated with depleted uranium. And downwind from those bases, there are very high rates in large areas where chronic wasting disease has been reported in wild game. And downstream from those bases, there are high rates of mad cow disease. So chronic wasting disease and mad cow disease are definitely linked to radiation exposure. They do chemical weapons testing too, especially up at Cold Lake in Canada, in Alberta province. So when you have chemicals combined with radiation, you have a synergistic effect where they multiply the effects of each other and make the exposure 10 times worse at least. So, of course, the people downwind and living around these bases are being exposed as well. And so I've had reports from women who heard my talks calling up or emailing me, and they live around military testing ranges, and they've complained about high rates of endometriosis, of breast cancer, uterine cancer, ovarian cancer. And very recently, I wrote a paper called Populations Exposed to Environmental Uranium, Increased Infertility and Reproductive Cancers, because a very important paper was written by a Navajo graduate student 1 year ago, and she reported from studies on mice that uranium is a strong estrogen and hormone disruptor. And that is the explanation, Jake, for why the reproductive cancers and infertility are so high in populations and individuals exposed to uranium.
Well, I'd like to remind my guests that we have been talking tonight with a very interesting woman who is a scientist, a geologist, and a person that really knows her stuff when it comes to depleted uranium and how it is used in weapons around the world. And it's pretty scary stuff. I'm just wondering if there's any light at the end of the tunnel as far as being able to somehow reverse this, or have you found anything like that?
There is a good message to all of this, because I can't just tell people it's all hopeless. It's not hopeless. As soon we know from the end of atmospheric testing in 1963 that the fishing catch in the North Atlantic Ocean recovered, it over-recovered within 4 or 5 years. So what we know from previous radiation, the use of radioactive technologies, is that when you turn them off and stop using them, the Earth heals itself very quickly. When uranium is rained out of the atmosphere, each particle is wet. It has moisture that condenses on it until it's heavy enough to fall out of the air as a raindrop. And whatever that particle sticks to, it could be plant material or buildings or streets or just the oceans or whatever. But whatever it sticks to, it cannot be removed. And it's because of, you know, when you put a drop of water on a microscope slide and you put another slide on top and then you try to pull them apart, that's called van der Waals forces that hold those two microscope slides together. Well, the same thing happens with nuclear particles when they have, they come out of air masses and they have moisture on them. And so they are removed from, most generally, from being biologically available. It's not all bad, but the most important message is that we have to stop using these technologies that are genocidal, they're omnicidal, they're suicidal, they're democidal. Democide means your government, your own government, is killing citizens deliberately. And it's just all pointless, really.
Well, I couldn't agree with you more. The whole thing is definitely pointless beyond belief. And I think we better, if we're going to straighten our act out, or we're just going to take everything with us. Are there any countries who have actually banned the use of depleted uranium weapons that you know of?
The term ban, in legal terms, is used to stop the use of a weapon system. For instance, the landmines are a really good example, which Princess Diana works so hard on. And so you put a temporary ban on a weapon system that is legal until you can get a treaty passed to make it illegal. Now, because depleted uranium violates the 1925 Geneva Poison Gas Protocol, and because it is a weapon of mass destruction that meets the definition of weapon of mass destruction under U.S. federal code in 2 out of 3 categories, and because it violates the Geneva and Hague conventions, their definitions and their tests for illegal weaponry, it was already an illegal weapon when it was suggested for development in 1943 or 42 under the Manhattan Project. So it is an illegal weapon. There is no reason to ban it. And what's happening now is there is a very, very sneaky and a very deceptive campaign going on to ban depleted uranium. And they want another treaty signed for it. Now, the purpose for doing that is that a new treaty would supersede all previous treaties and cancel them, and it would relieve all the countries who've used depleted uranium from any reparations or any having to clean up or provide the citizens, the populations, with medical care. So this is a very, very dangerous movement, and people should be very careful not to use the term ban in relation to uranium weapons, because they're already illegal. But the UN, I'm sorry, now I'll answer your question. The United Nations did pass a resolution, the Human Rights Commission, in 1996, stating that depleted uranium weaponry is illegal because it violates the Human Rights Convention. Now, other countries are involved, the EU and the UN, in doing something about depleted uranium, but that's where the movement to ban it is coming from. And it's just a very deceptive way to let the perpetrators off the hook. Alex Adamenenko in the Canadian Parliament is working to stop the production of depleted uranium in Canada and also to stop uranium mining, because he's with the NDP and he's from the Kootenays area. He's a Russian Canadian representing the Dukovar community, primarily in the Kootenays. And there is proposed uranium mining in that area. It's actually all over Canada. So there's a much greater awareness now, and I think fairly soon it will be politically too dangerous to continue using it. But they're not stopping. They are still using it.
Well, Loren Murray, I want to thank you so much for taking the time out of your schedule to come on Authors Audio and really lay it out for people in a very well-done scientific way so that they can think about this very carefully with the facts and ask themselves, do I want my son and daughter to be exposed to this? Do I want to be exposed to this? Do I want everything I eat to be exposed to this, to drink? So these are the questions that I want you to really think about. And you know what we have to do? We have to stop the military-industrial complex from developing this stuff. And let's get behind what Loren has been doing for many years and support her in her work to stop the use of depleted uranium and get back to the garden where we belong. So this is Jake D. Steele saying, keep dreaming and happy reading. Bye for now.